listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. A survey for UW System students about issues of freedom of speech and expression has been postponed by the organizers. That survey also led in part to the resignation of UW-Whitewater's interim chancellor, we learned this week. WPR higher education reporter Rich Kramer has been following this story. Rich, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob, thanks for being here, or thanks for having me.
I'm glad to be here, too. That's okay. Who's behind this survey, Rich? Where is this thing coming from?
This is a partnership. It's coming from the Menard Center for, called the Menard Center for Institutional and Policy Research at UW-Stout in Menominee. And it's also in collaboration with an organization called WIPS, which is based in Wausau, the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Those are the two people behind it, organizations behind it. There's a advisory board that is overseeing or was overseeing the design of the survey, and but really still learning about who all is involved.
And what, give us a little bit of the backstory leading up to this week when this was postponed until next fall. Why has this survey kind of emerged as a story?
Well, because it was in the works and you know, a lot of people didn't know about it. The broader picture here is that individuals, in particular conservative individuals and lawmakers, have been critical of college campuses as kind of bastions of liberalism that stifle conservative speech and conservative speakers. So that's the backdrop. And then all of a sudden there was this resignation that was sudden, and it was Jim Henderson, an interim chancellor at UW-Whitewater. He was pretty vague in his description, but I started hearing from people on campus and elsewhere that the resignation was about this survey. So then I got a hold of some lawmakers. I found out that individual named Tim Scheel is at the Menard Center at Stout, and he was one of the big, he's the principal investigator in this, what he says is just a simple academic study. Mm-hmm. But the overall concern from some people was that politicians, Republican politicians, were getting involved in kind of pushing this to happen. But turns out that this is a survey that had been in the works since at least January, maybe earlier. Former interim UW system president Tommy Thompson was supportive of it. He even mentioned something about a survey of this type going to students before he left office in January, before he resigned. So that's kind of what we started piecing together on Tuesday, the day after Jim Henderson resigned, and still learning about it.
And now this was supposed to go out yesterday to students, and it did not. What happened?
Yeah, well, the for lack of better terms, the Tim Scheel felt that there was an avalanche of questions, he said, and there wasn't enough time to answer all of those questions. The goal had always been for the survey to go out April 7th, but because there were so many questions, Mr. Scheel decided to delay it. And the reason he wanted to get it done in the spring was because of a funding issue. The funding comes from the Menard Center, which is funded by the family of billionaire John Menard. And he said now that it's been delayed, he still thinks that the funding can come together. So that was part of it. But I also heard from State Representative Dave Murphy, a Republican from Greenville, also chair of the Colleges and Universities Committee in the Assembly, said that they too had reached out and they wanted to make sure that this happened in the spring. Initially, it sounded like there was discussion within UW system of whether they were going to participate or not. A couple weeks ago, I guess interim president Michael Falbo, who is now UW system interim president, pulled the plug on it. But then Tim Scheel sent a letter saying, hey, we should do this. This is legitimate research. You know, there's a lot of misinformation, so we need to do this. We need to, with this data, we can kind of put these allegations of, you know, conservatives being stifled on campuses to rest. So with that, interim president Falbo said, okay, we're back on. And then there was some disagreements, and that's what led to the resignation of Mr. Henderson from Whitewater.
We'll be talking to Tim Scheel on Central Time on Monday. So, Rich, for now, there's a holding pattern until the fall?
That's what it looks like. Yeah, there's not a specific date, but the fall semester, which will probably be here sooner than we would like, with regard to the winter weather. But but there's still a question, like there's no specific date, you know, funding could be an issue, supposedly, I'm not sure. And I've even heard from some, from a lawmaker saying, well, they say they're going to do in the fall, but they're not so sure, because there's been so much back and forth. It's really up in the air, but that's the plan, that it will go to all students at the four-year universities.
Rich, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
That's Rich Kramer, higher education reporter at WPR. We talked to him today about a UW system survey for students about freedom of speech and expression. Delayed once again, scheduled to come out this week now, scheduled for next fall on Monday at 3:30 on Central Time. We'll talk to Tim Scheel from UW-Stout about the survey and what is going into it. Now, the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration announced an increase in fuel economy standards in cars and other vehicles last week. Here's Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg last week referencing the corporate average fuel economy standards that followed the 1973 oil embargo.
Before those CAFE standards started in the 1970s, the average vehicle got about 13 miles per gallon. With the standards we're announcing today, by 2026, the average vehicle will get 49 miles per gallon.
We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What kind of fuel economy do you get with your vehicle or vehicles right now? Are you in the market for a new car? Are you looking at that gas mileage number? How big a deal is it for you? Do you want to see regulations move those numbers up, those fuel economy numbers up? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Steph Tai is a professor at UW-Madison's School of Law with a focus on environmental law, administrative law, and contracts. Steph, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me, Tim.
When you first heard about this new fuel economy standard, what is your first reaction to the numbers they're putting out and sort of the guidelines you're seeing?
Yeah, it seems like this has been in the making for a while. So when Biden issued his executive order regarding reconsideration of former rules, basically meaning the Trump administration rules, in incorporating science into their thing, into their discussions, this was in the works for a while, because it sort of prompted the Department of Transportation to review whether or not the fuel economy standards were actually incorporating the state of the science in that. And that meant that the Trump administration's requirement of only a 1.5% annual increase in efficiency was, according to the Department of Transportation, not really in accordance with what would be acceptable according to the science of energy vehicle production, hybrid production, et cetera. And so they revisited that prior rule, and that's why they adopted this.
We just heard there, average of 49 miles per gallon. Average is a big word there, and the way the numbers are measured can be difficult to read. Is this announcement as significant as it might sound at first glance?
It is, in the sense that it means that the automobile companies will have to incorporate a lot of like new technological developments in order to sort of reach that average kind of standard. So it does have some kind of effect, although it doesn't mean that every single instance of driving is going to reach that kind of standard.
Then there's the light truck question, which is, a really popular kind of car. It covers a lot of things like pickups and SUVs and others. Where do those end up falling, those very widely used vehicles in our market?
Yeah, I think that's still going to be addressed in a future kind of rule. But one of the things that was done in a previous regulation was that the Biden administration restored California's ability to create even more stringent standards than the federal standards. And so, and this is part of this whole background of the Clean Air Act, where it really couldn't get passed without like California's assent. And what that meant was that California has always had the ability under the Clean Air Act to apply to the EPA and the Department of Transportation for an exception, right? An exception to it where they could create more stringent standards, mostly due to LA. And for that reason, they might still be able to address things. And the Biden administration seems willing to assent to California's ability to address things so that there are more stringent standards for light vehicles, light trucks.
It's Brianna Collar at 800-642-1234. George is with us in Ashland. George, hi.
Hi. Question. For my conventional pickup truck, fuel cost me about 30 cents a mile. And for my my EV, it cost me to operate about 5 cents per mile. So what I was wondering was whether the manufacturers under the new fuel standards get credit for their EV production.
George, thanks. Yeah, how do electric vehicles fit in, Steph?
Yeah, so they get credit in the sense that states have incentives now under this rule to create incentives for more production. And so it's up to the states in a way to create those incentives. There's also a lot of lobbying from various automobile manufacturers to create various incentives on the part of the federal government to help people meet the standard. And so we're going to see what happens in that mix. It's not entirely clear, but some of the stuff that might happen might be more sort of case by case or state by state kind of incentives.
George, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to UW-Madison Law Professor Steph Tighe, looking at new federal fuel economy and emissions standards. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these new standards? Do they go far enough? Do you want to see more stringent regulations on fuel economy in vehicles sold in the U.S.? And do you want to see more incentives for things like those electric vehicles that our caller just brought up? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And as gas prices have gone up lately, does that have you thinking more about fuel economy? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with UW-Madison Law Professor Steph Tighe, looking at new federal fuel economy standards as part of a larger Biden administration push to improve emissions and decrease the harmful effects of transportation on climate change. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions, your thoughts on vehicle mileage. Do you think it's more important to make our vehicles more fuel efficient because of concerns about global warming, about reliance on petroleum products from around the world? Call 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Drew is with us in Green Bay. Drew, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. I was just hoping to get your thoughts and some information on the state's additional taxes to electric vehicle owners. I think I understand that the purpose is that they're not paying fuel taxes at the pump. And I can take my answer off air.
Drew, thanks for that call. We get calls about this, I think, especially from EV owners. Steph, states, not just Wisconsin, charging additional fees because they're not collecting gas taxes from electric vehicles. Is that kind of at cross purposes with the efforts to encourage electric vehicles?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Drew. And it really does point to the, I guess, mixed messages that states are sending, right? On one hand, sometimes they're trying to encourage fuel efficiency, but they're still adding in this stuff to increase basically state revenue. And so it is something where states are not actually always being on point about this. And I'm glad you point to this phenomenon. And I think, you know, it's unfortunate. And to the extent that you can participate as someone who cares about this issue, you can write to your sort of legislatures to talk about these kinds of different taxes. That said, one thing that states can do is they can also give rebates for purchases of electric vehicles. And some of the states that, even though they create additional fines for electric vehicles, can also create rebates for the purchases of them. And so there's all this sort of mixed messages that states send.
Drew, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Steph, part of the reason for these mileage changes, not the only reason, but part of it is climate change. How big a part of the picture is, you know, our transportation fleet, our cars and trucks in the United States when it comes to climate change related emissions?
So it varies from state to state. For some states, it's a really significant part of their climate change, carbon emissions. And for other states, it's not as much. And it really depends on sort of really how much vehicle driving there is within that state. So it varies a lot, but it's still a significant chunk in terms of different sectors if you average it around all states. So it's fairly significant, and it's something that it makes sense for the Biden administration to address. And it also makes sense to address things like supply chain kind of issues, right? Because we're seeing this right now with respect to sort of Russian sanctions. And so in terms of long-term supply chain planning, we only have so much in terms of strategic oil reserves. And so limiting our dependence on fossil fuels can help with future sort of energy needs.
Now, these kind of changes could have a slow result because they apply to new cars on the market. Yes. Most of the cars we're driving aren't brand new. So these things take a while to phase in. Can you talk about how that affects the impact of a change like this?
Yeah. So what it's seen as is it's like seen as a sort of technological ramping, right? The idea is that once a company is forced or pressured to put in place additional technologies, they're going to use them from now on, right? Because they've already adopted those technologies, they're engineered that technology, that's something that they continue to use. And so the idea is that even though it's a slow change in terms of creation of new cars, it's a faster change in terms of technology development.
We're talking to Steph Tighe, law professor at UW-Madison, who specializes in environmental law, looking at this new fuel economy standard from the Biden administration, raising the average fuel economy in the American new car fleet. The goal, the average would be 49 miles per gallon. Still time for your call with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Big picture, Steph, you mentioned earlier, this is a reversal of a Trump administration standard, which itself was a reversal, I believe, an Obama administration standard, and so back. How much does that sort of ping pong back and forth affect the impact of changes like this?
So here's the thing about this is like administrations change. And I think manufacturers know that administrations change. So they plan for some degree of uncertainty. And so to the extent that they know that things are going to change, but that certain types of administrations are going to require much higher kind of standards, they're going to be having in their background, like, you know, in the back of their minds, like adoption of new technologies. And so there's a sort of underlying pressure that's still there, despite this fluctuation between administration and administration. You see that already in some fossil fuel plants where folks have already been phasing them out, not even though like the Trump administration adopted much more lenient rules for them, simply because they were concerned that a change in administration that they weren't sure about would happen and that they'd have to rapidly adopt, whereas it'd be more financially prudent to sort of plan things out beforehand.
How much do other markets around the world, I think especially the European Union, drive this? If I'm an automaker, I want to sell cars in France and Germany. Am I developing that technology anyway, regardless of what Americans are thinking about?
Yes, they absolutely do. And so sort of the global kind of regulatory system matters. Whatever the EU does matters. So they're responding to all of that. And so it's like a complicated calculus on their point in terms of what to anticipate and why.
Time for another caller. Steve is with us in New Glarus. Steve, hello.
Yeah, hi. Yes, I'm just reminded that back when this started before years ago, when they brought out electric cars because the gas prices were getting so high. And the problem with that was I made a mistake of buying one, but you couldn't go to a gas station. That's where they were supposed to charge them. They would charge the batteries on the electric cars, and they said they weren't allowed to because they all had contracts with the gas companies, the fuel companies, and they weren't allowed they were not allowed to charge any electric cars. So I'm just wondering if there's some way it wasn't a bad idea. Certainly, it was better than putting all the gas fumes in the air.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. And he brings up a really important point, Steph. And I know part of the latest infrastructure bill, one of the big goals is to boost charging. How much of that other stuff needs to happen to make these mileage standards meetable?
I absolutely agree. And I think that building charging stations that are strategically structured so that people can charge for long range kind of drives is extremely important. And I think that to the extent that the Biden administration can do anything to really boost the use of electric vehicles, it's doing very strategic plans to actually have those charging stations in place. One of the things that the Biden administration has said, and I don't know whether they're following up on this, but they've said that they're working with a number of various chains to sort of install charging stations. I anticipate this means convenience store chains, which are one of the more easily used for charging stations, because people can go in, shop around for their food, and then also get their cars charged. And so to the extent that they can really amplify that, I think that would be a really great way to address some of the charging issues.
Thanks a lot for that call, Steve. And just our last half a minute or so, Steph, what are you watching for next on fuel economy in America?
I think this is a really great change. I don't know whether it's going to get challenged by automobile manufacturers. There have been already things in the press with automobile manufacturers claiming that it's going to take way too much money to actually manufacture vehicles that actually meet up with these requirements, and that therefore the cost savings aren't so great on the part of consumers, because the cost savings will be exactly replaced by the cost of manufacturing those new vehicles. That said, traditionally, people have done meta studies on claims of costs of meeting regulatory requirements. And in general, it seems like those anticipated costs are way lower than the actual cost. So I anticipate that that's going to be sort of in the background of all of this.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Steph Tai, professor at the UW-Madison School of Law, joining us for a look at fuel economy standards Monday on Central Time. We'll hear for a call for changes in dairy laws in the federal farm bill and how it affects Wisconsin, that and more. Coming up Monday here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, last weekend's Grammy Awards featured some stars from the social app TikTok. We'll find out how the platform is influencing the music industry. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's Food Friday, and we'll put the spotlight on the humble egg. A cookbook author joins us to share tips on using fresh eggs from breakfast to dessert. First, social media apps like TikTok are starting to play a bigger and bigger role in the music industry. Many of the young up-and-coming artists at the Grammys last weekend found success through their popularity on the short-form video sharing platform. And satellite radio, for example, now even has a dedicated music channel for songs that are popular on TikTok. What does this all mean for the music of the future? Want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you use TikTok? Do you enjoy the songs you hear on the app? Where do you discover new music? Is it on a social media platform, on YouTube, on a streaming channel, radio, record store? Tell us about it. Call 800-642-1234. And if you are a musician, if you create music, have you tried to harness the power of social media platforms? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Storm Glor is an associate professor in the College of Arts and Media at the University of Colorado, Denver. He's president of the International Music and Entertainment Industry Educators Association, associate member of the Recording Academy, and once performed with Sting. Storm, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. I'm honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, social media changes fast. I imagine the relationship between the music industry and social media changes pretty quickly, too. What is at top of mind for you right now when it comes to the way platforms like TikTok affect the music we end up hearing?
Well, I could take a number of perspectives in that case, but what's, you know, really amazing is our recent Grammy wins by, you know, two creators who found fame on TikTok. And, you know, the history is, or at least the music business history is strewn with artists who struck it going viral on social media, and even before that on platforms like MTV. So in a sense, we're seeing, no pun intended, the same song, but a different tune. when it comes to these platforms.
I want to check out a couple of those winners. The Grammy for Best Musical Theater Album was the unofficial Bridgerton musical. So it's a musical inspired by the streaming TV show Bridgerton. Here's a 23-year-old Abigail Barlow, 20-year-old Emily Bear, who started on TikTok.
A year ago, when I asked the internet what if Bridgerton was a musical, I could not have imagined we would be holding a Grammy in our hands. We want to thank everyone on the internet who has watched us create this album from the ground up. We share this with you.
You are just as much as part of this project as we are.
Storm, you know, that story in the music world of, you know, hey, any kid out of anywhere could start playing music and, you know, make it big. Is that really how it's working on a place like TikTok now?
Well, not necessarily. In fact, your question is very timely because even major record label executives are questioning it these days. But the beauty of that Bridgerton musical TikTok event mm-hmm. is that it's very imperative with social media that you get engagement. And this is engagement on steroids. What they accomplished by inviting users to contribute and create this this work as creators and create an album that could stand comparison at the awards, I think is really what we all dreamed of social media doing for music. It's created, you know, fans of that. It's received critical acclaim and very much in non-digital terms, an organic growth involving music fans. And that's what makes it so special.
I understand the engagement factor is a big part of this. So if I put a track on TikTok and a funny video, that alone isn't enough. What drives a lot of it is somebody else takes a bit from the song and does a dance to it, and somebody else does a cover of it, and it kind of multiplies and spreads, not just through my creativity, but through other people jumping on board and running with it.
Absolutely. And you know, there's this plus that comes with what TikTok is doing and really exploding is this idea of recreators, folks who take a song that's could be already popular and create a dance and send streams of that record to, you know, higher numbers, or folks that create something as whimsical and as crazy as the skateboarder who, you know, drank cranberry juice to dreams. You know, it's very exciting from both a fan standpoint, and, you know, it provides this opportunity to the music business that has added income and given some new artists some new opportunities.
Talking to Storm Glore, associate professor at the University of Colorado Denver, expert on the music industry, looking at the role of TikTok and other online platforms in how people find music, how people share music, how people recreate music. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Think about new songs, new artists you've discovered, maybe just over the last year or 2 years. Where did you first find out about them? Was it online? Was it on YouTube or TikTok or Spotify or Pandora or on the radio or from a friend? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Want to check out another big Grammy artist here, a nominee for Best New Artist, Olivia Rodrigo, the winner of that award, 19-year-old, won Best Vocal Album and Best Pop Solo Performance for her song Driver's License. Here's a bit.
Guess you didn't mean what you wrote in that song about me. You said forever, now I drive alone past your street.
Now, Storm, this isn't just an online phenomenon. Rodrigo's songs had plenty of mainstream popularity on the charts. Do you expect to see a lot of that hybrid thing? Now, as you mentioned earlier, the music industry paying attention to social media.
Oh, absolutely. In this artist's case, as you say, those songs were already gaining ground at radio and other platforms, but fans recognized these, I guess you'd say, TikTok ready songs, and Olivia put out several of them that exploded her sales and again took it just to a new level instead of just breaking the record, so to speak, for her. And but you know, ultimately, one argument against this idea of social media breaking artists is that it's going to come down to the songs ultimately. they have to be right. And whatever is however they are interpreted, it's still going to have to be meaningful songs that are going to ultimately, you know, really sink in with music consumers. And this is a classic case of that with Olivia Rodrigo's music.
You just used a phrase, TikTok ready songs. What does that mean?
Well, I'm not going to name names, but there are certainly artists out there who create songs using the right beats to create a dance, using the right lyrics to, you know, that will people will relate to. And with any medium, artists can tend to start creating songs with an effort to break into that media. And I mentioned earlier, you know, that this is very similar to, you know, what happened in the early 80s with MTV. All of a sudden, artists are making exciting videos with the pure intent of getting them played on MTV. And while if we knew the correct formula, we'd all be millionaires, that is artists. It's sometimes, you know, you're taking a gamble, but when you go down that lane of creating something to make it TikTok ready, you bear that risk.
I could see some musicians looking down on that idea. Oh, you're selling out to TikTok. But, you know, if you wanted to get something in top 40 radio for years, you better keep it under 3 minutes. If you want to have your chamber music ready, you better write it for the right instrumentation for whoever's supporting that band. Music's always had some element of that, right?
Absolutely. One thing, I did a research project on lyrics on pop songs, and the introductions, the intros to pop songs were as long as a minute in the 1990s. But now, with the case of social media being, you know, a marketing platform that you got to be on, your intros, before you start singing and add vocals to a track, they better happen within 8 seconds or even less. And there you have just what you say. It, you know, marketing can drive the creation of the song in that way.
Is that because we have the power to quickly click to another song if that 8 second intro didn't grab us?
Yes, absolutely. What I'm referring to is information put out by YouTube as to how quickly a listener will click out of a song, which is, you know, just like the equivalent of FM radio not wanting you to switch stations in your automobile, right? That you don't want to lose them. And so that's why you've got to be quick, because I'm not going to, you know, some people would comment on the short attention spans of music consumers. And I don't think it's that. I think there's just so much more music for you to listen to that it's there for you to click on. It's that easy. So yeah, you've got to keep that in mind.
We're talking to University of Colorado Denver media professor Storm Glore about how TikTok and other online platforms are influencing the music industry. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. If you watched or followed the Grammys last weekend, how many of the newer artists were you familiar with? Did you know them through social media? Do you find music through TikTok or YouTube? What do your kids do, if you know what they do to find music? Let us know, 800-642-1234. If you are that kid, love to hear from you too. 800-642-1234. Call in now. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up here on Central Time. I told you long ago, on the road, I got what they waiting for. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. That's Industry Baby by Lil Nas X, another artist who rose to fame in large part because of his popularity on the social media app TikTok. We're picking up our conversation now about how the music industry is being influenced by social media and trying to influence social media to play their stuff. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Not a lot of TikTok users out there. Maybe have you checked it out to try to find music? Is it baffling to you? If that's not where you find your music, where do you find new stuff? Or do you avoid the new stuff? Call in now at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Storm Glore is an associate professor in the College of Arts and Media at the University of Colorado, Denver. And Storm, we just heard Lil Nas X there. He is an artist who really, again, it seems like came out of nowhere with a track largely on TikTok. Could you talk about his rise to like this really high level of musical prominence?
Yeah, this is a fantastic story. An artist who's sort of down on their luck and struggling and has this Old Town Road, which is breaking a lot of barriers down with its mix of country and hip hop. And as I mentioned earlier, sometimes the quirkiness, sometimes the originality and the vast amount of creativity behind a track will make it go viral. And that's what happened. All of a sudden it was out there. But what's interesting about Lil Nas X, and as we know now, you know, almost 2 years later, he had the talent behind that song, and he's been able to cachet that into, you know, other songs, and is certainly, you know, though it started with Old Town Road, he's proven that he wasn't just a one-hit wonder.
Now, timing can be weird on these things. Some songs and artists that don't make it right away might get a second life. Here's the band Glass Animals. They put out their song Heat Waves in 2020. Didn't peak till over a year later. It reached number 3 on the charts last November, thanks in large part to social media. Here's a quick listen. Sometimes all I think about is you. Late nights in the middle of June. Heat waves been faking me out. Can't make you happier now. Sometimes now, Storm, Glass Animals, nominated as Best New Artist 8 years after they released their first album. I don't know how exactly.
Yes.
That's a weird category. But these songs, and you mentioned earlier Fleetwood Mac, those young kids there, a 1977 song, Dreams. Also, like, things can just kind of spin out of nowhere after initially disappearing.
Yes, and I think the Glass Animals story is real interesting. I know they came through here quite a bit, touring in their early stages of their career, and I think their first EP came out in 2012. So you're right, it's taken so long, but social media made a difference with that song Heat Waves in you know, absolutely putting them into the mainstream map. This also happened with Portugal the Man a few years ago with Feel It Still. And so sometimes you see these artists take off because of social media, but they didn't just start out yesterday by any means.
You work with the Grammys, Storm, so I'll ask you, what is the deal with that new music category? What determines newness of a band in that category?
Oh, I could spend a long time talking about that, but you know, we do have a history of that happening. I remember when I was at the Grammys the year the band Fun won the Grammy, and the lead singer got up and said, you know, we've been going at this 12 years, which was very telling for getting the Best New Artist award. But in actuality, that's the route you want to go. I wish luck to any artist trying to strike it rich on social media with their first hit. But artist development is still the key in the music industry. Putting out 2 or 3 albums before that hit happens is actually beneficial, as you might imagine, growing that audience organically and reaching that success slowly but surely and finding your niche and everything is what happened with Glass Animals. They, you know, they found where they needed to be musically and have capitalized on it, but they were not an overnight sensation by any means.
Talking about music, how it's created, how it spreads now, how the music industry and TikTok and other online platforms play off of each other. Storm Glore stays with us from the University of Colorado, Denver. Still time for you to call in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. If you have a story to share, do you listen to music with other people in the car, at the office, in your house, or is it a solo personal experience for you now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Storm, is it just me? Is there just like so much more music now than there used to be? Like, it used to be you had a handful of categories. You found the radio station that matched it. You had a common interest with people who listened to that same station. Now you can really seek out just about anything.
Absolutely. I tell my students all the time that it is just a fantastic time to be a music fan. You can find the music you like communally with your fellow fans that you meet online. Whatever genre appeals to you, however small the audience might be for it, an artist can now find that small audience, and those audience members, you know, can, and again, form those communities through social media. So it's a great time to be a music fan. Now, on the other hand, it has greatly increased the competition for artists. They are fighting now with, attention from versus these bigger artists who, you know, practically monopolize a lot of the traditional marketing platforms. So it, at the same time, it's tougher and more challenging for musicians to break through with all the competition. And the barriers to entry are absolutely lowered, as witnessed by these social media platforms. Anybody can post a video. So it's good and bad.
I feel bad when I talk to music writers and music critics, because I have no idea how they keep up with their jobs, given all the music out there. How do you, as someone, really connected and interested in the music industry, what is your process of discovering new music that you like?
Oh, personally, I look to my friends. I'm always asking, through social media or in person, I'm always looking at what other people are listening to. And I tend to try to listen to as much as possible too, until something, you know, hits me right. But I don't know that I'm average in that sense. But it again is there's so many platforms and there's so many ways to hear it that you could probably get 100 different answers to that question. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And do you give more than that 8 seconds to let that song kick in?
I do, but I'm old school though. I'm old school, so I definitely check it out. But you know what's interesting about, you know, how we find music and you know, that we have so many more ways to hear it? I think still consumers only have so much mind space. I did a research study on one-hit wonders, which is very relevant, you know, to what's going on. And typically the amount of artists, new artists every year, has been about 50%. It's anyway from 48 to 52%. You know, if you look at it. But what's interesting is it's so consistent year to year. And what that tells me is that consumers can only, you know, take so much music. I mean, there's only so many hours in the day, but we tend to, with our favorite songs, only have so much mind space. And that makes it difficult.
Now, if you and I had this conversation a year from now, I don't know, things could be pretty different. What are the trends you are watching for in this next year?
Well, the trend of engaging fans more in this recreation process, I think is a promising trend for the music business, as labels can find more ways to let fans remix, recreate, create a dance to, or anything with the music and the content they're putting out. It's going to be better for all of us. And a recognition from artists that they can see that it's not just about putting a song on a social media platform and hoping it goes well and goes viral, but constantly communicating with your fans and producing more content more often. I think all of these things are promising trends that artists have latched onto and record labels are focused on, that I think make it even a better fan experience. And I think it's an exciting time ahead.
Storm, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Rob. Appreciate it.
Storm Glora is an associate professor in the College of Arts and Media at the University of Colorado, Denver. He's also president of the International Music and Entertainment Industry Educators Association and an associate member of the Recording Academy. He joined us for a look at the latest in the music industry, how it's changed a lot because of TikTok and other online platforms and how it's trying to work with that. Coming up after the news, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We'll talk with a fifth-generation chicken keeper about using fresh eggs in the kitchen and get lots of recipes, too. You can call in with your questions, your favorites, and I'm hoping we'll hear from some people with those backyard chickens about the eggs you get and what you do with them. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.